extensive line of products as well as design services. Phone is 217-355-0550. They are located at 905 South Neal Street in Champaign or www.champaignprinting.com.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1. This is an encore presentation of In the Know.
PM.
Good evening, CU community. You're listening to WEFT 90.1. Welcome to In the Know, a public affairs show where social issues, trending topics, relevant research, and important perspectives are discussed so you, the listener, can be in the know. The opinions expressed on this show are those of the host and guests and not of WEFT. We're streaming live on my personal Facebook page. Well, actually, sorry, tonight we are not streaming live. The host is not feeling well, so didn't really want to go visual tonight. But you can catch us on Radio Free America locally at 90.1, obviously. And this will be archived on my Facebook page. Tonight we are talking about a lot of different things around the topic of reentry, as well as what those people who are incarcerated get as far as services, because I think that's one of the debates we see is, are we, you know, just kind of locking people up and not giving them any resources to, you know, improve their situation once they are able to re-enter society. I have four guests in the studio tonight. I'm going to have them introduce themselves, talk a little bit about the work they're currently doing and, you know, any background on work that they have done around these topics in the past. And we're going to start over here with Joby Taylor from Truce.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Joby Taylor. I'm the community outreach manager for anti-violence initiative called Truce. I'm also a EJP alumni. I'm a formerly incarcerated individual, and I'm happy to be here.
My name is Jerome White. I'm associating myself with First Followers. I just moved to this town from Chicago. And I'm trying to volunteer with them to see what I could bring to the table. I also was incarcerated for 28 years. I've been home 10, from prison to a paralegal. I work for attorneys as an investigator and as a paralegal.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Martha Mitchell. I'm actually the founding co-director of First Followers, which is a not-for-profit here in Champaign, located at 401 East Park Street. At Bethel AME Church, where we run a drop-in center 2 days a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays from 1 to 5, where we try to provide services, and then we also do a lot of advocacy around the criminal justice system and seeing systemic changes.
Hi, I'm Nick Hopkins. I'm a law student, and I also coordinate the Illinois Reentry Guide Initiative, which is a part of the Education Justice Project that Joby mentioned earlier. The guide itself is an initiative that was created just about 3 years ago, and it was generated by interest from EJP alumni. And the idea was to offer and supplement resources that people get when they leave prison in Illinois. And so we now offer a free 250-page guide for people who get out and are always trying to improve it.
So we know that, you know, that's I think one of the continual social justice issues that we have is this concept of locking people up for punishment and then expecting when they get out to be able to do everything that they're supposed to do to contribute to society. And we know that, again, I've kind of compared this to, you know, other initiatives that people really feel are possible without any help is, you know, you're asking somebody who writes with their right hand to start writing with their left hand without any resources, any instruction, and any support. So to kind of help people understand more about how your different groups affect those who are incarcerated or who are, you know, reentering society, tell me a little bit about how your different groups came about. You know, what happened? Was there a specific situation? Was this just something that you felt was a need here in Champaign? We'll start over here with Joby. Just kind of let us know what spawned this idea.
Well, Truce is an anti-violence initiative geared towards ending gun violence here in Champaign, Urbana. And we're not actually a reentry program. We're really trying to save lives and prevent kids and teenagers from going through the criminal justice system.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we try to stop them on the front end. So, you know, by me being formerly incarcerated, I spent 20 years in prison. So, you know, I just tell my story to the young guys and just try to get them some type of motivation and hope, you know, and encouragement to not go down the path that I went down when I was their age. So that's what we do. We try to help and educate the youth, you know, to not go down the same path that, you know, we as formerly incarcerated individuals went down.
Mm-hmm. So, and Patricia Avery is a part of this initiative, correct?
Yes, Patricia Avery. Truce is ran through CUAP, Champaign Urbana Area Project. We came up with Truce back in 2016. The end of the later part of 2015. It was in the infant stages. We end up, you know, having, we adapted the violent interrupters model from Mr. T.O. Hardeman. He came down and he trained our staff.
From Chicago.
Mm-hmm. He trained our staff in conflict resolutions and, you know, how to attack the violence on the front end.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a 40-hour training, and, you know, all our staff were professionally trained,
mm-hmm,
in conflict resolution.
Okay. And Marlon, so again, you know, talking about this idea of, you know, we see a lot of different programs pop up, especially in the CU community. You know, what was really the driving factor behind First Followers? Obviously, there's a need, no question. But I'm always curious, you know, how people really get that motivation to create something great.
Well, the motivation factor is that, you know, over the last 34 years, it's the criminal justice system has targeted certain communities, right? And one of the communities being mine, African-American community, low-income community, communities I come from. So personally, I've been able to see that. Unfortunately, I've been able to experience all of that. And one of the things that really stands out is that, you know, in the state of Illinois, we had the prison population grew and ballooned up to almost 50,000, maybe about a year or two ago. So in 2015, understanding that incarceration, certain communities being over-incarcerated because of the targeted incarcerated of those communities, I just wanted to be a change agent. Mm-hmm. It personally has affected me, my family, the community I come from, friends, family, like I mentioned. But, you know, oftentimes we see people talking about what the issues are, and we all understand what the issues are, but just trying to peel back the onion to get to a point of solutions, right? So I mentioned that down at First Followers, one of the things we pride ourselves with is that we do advocacy. I'm a PhD student, fourth-year PhD student at the university, and I like to do a lot of research. So back in 2014, 2015, trying to get a better understanding what this targeted incarceration, you know, what was the source of it, and how can we change that narrative? So I came up with the idea of starting a reentry program. Reason being because 95-96% of the people that are incarcerated are going to return at some point to their communities.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we all know the systemic and the structural barriers that come along with that. For example, employment opportunities, the lack thereof, education, you know, trying to get back in school and different things like that. Things that have been structurally put in place to make that whole reentry process just a hindrance and people putting things behind them and moving forward with their lives. Jerome and I, we were just talking a little bit back at the church about, you know, when a guy comes home, you know, what does he have to look forward to? When you've been incarcerated for years and you've been separated not only from your family but your community, you know, where do I start?
Mm-hmm.
So with First Followers, we try to, we work off a mentoring-based model. And what that means is there's a lot of people that volunteer with the program that have been through incarceration, the criminal justice system as a whole. And one of the things that we tell ourselves, you know, those who are closest to the problem are closest to the solutions. And so we kind of pick up that flag and we run with that, because at the end of the day, nobody can tell your story like you can tell your story. And so we just try to encourage people, you know, that have been through that, whether they've been incarcerated themselves or if a family member has been incarcerated. Because we all know when a person leaves and goes off to the penitentiary, they're leaving things behind. they're leaving people behind. They're leaving their family, friends, mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers. They're leaving those people behind. And when you return, you know, what does that relationship look like?
Right. You're going to say something, Drew?
Yeah. You asked what was the motivation or the inspiration. One of the things, after doing 20 plus years inside of a prison, I saw a lot of young kids come into that prison system. And I joined, I'm associating myself with Marlon because he's got a model that need to be. But more than anything, I wanted to also, like he said, stop it before you even get there, before you become an offender, understanding the school system. When I was when I graduated from out of high school, from grammar school, I couldn't do seventh grade work. So the high school became catch a girl, kiss a girl, a boxing arena, a gambling casino, and a lab. And the kids that I saw come into the system experienced that same situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lack of education, lack of job opportunities. So with this young man here, Marlon, I want to bring that part of it to his organization as well, if it's possible.
I think one of the, you know, when, you know, like you were saying, a lot of things get talked about, not a lot gets done. But I think even in those discussions, there can be a disservice that's done because you're not talking about it in a very candid, real way. You know, like when you're talking about the over-incarceration of certain populations, I think race can always be a touchy subject for people, and so they tend to avoid it. But if you're not having an actual genuine conversation about who these actual people are who are being affected by these different systems, then you're never going to be able to fix it because you're not applying what really, really should be individualized assistance. It shouldn't be a one-size-fits-all model that what works for you works for you works for me kind of thing. You need to be able to look at who these populations are and, you know, how they're being affected. Not terribly long ago, on the U of I campus, which they always bring in, you know, the people who, you know, are trying to make waves. Piper Kerman came in. She's the author of Orange is the New Black, and she was talking about being a white woman incarcerated and the women that she came across and just the disparities that were there. And, you know, having experienced it herself, because I think that's actually something that a panelist at one of the recent events said, you know, things don't affect you until it affects you. Like, until you're the one who's actually right there having to go through it, it doesn't affect you. And so her experience, you know, with the drug-related offense, which we see the disparities with who's, you know, charged, convicted, and incarcerated for drug-related offenses, you know, she was talking about how this is something that has to change. And then how do you help these women who, a lot of them are single mothers, and how do you help them once they have that reentry step and you're asking them to take care of their kids efficiently and effectively? But what resources are we really giving them? And then, she, you know, one of, I think, in the talk that she gave on campus, one of the things she mentioned was what I'm sure everybody who's experiencing reentry experiences, you know, how long do you have to be punished for your crime? You know, where you have to disclose, you know, being arrested or being convicted or, you know, your record, which for the greater society, they feel that's a safety for everybody. You know, now we know who we're hiring. Now we know who's employed. But at the same time, how do you expect anything to be different? You know, you have Joby over here at the front end, but, you know, being able to send that message as a proactive measure saying, you know, you don't want to go down this road. It's also kind of hard to have those youth appreciate that, you know, in any way, shape, or form, whether they go to, whether they, you know, take this path or this path, is there really ever any, you know, equal access to the same types of things as other groups? So again, you know, like Marlon's saying, I think you have to have a very real discussion about who is impacted by different decisions in different systems. But, you know, the work you guys are doing is moving forward, you know, pushing it in a certain direction. I learned about EJP several years ago. I always wanted to get involved, never quite had the time. I'm fortunate that this coming semester I'm going to be able to teach financial wellness to those who are incarcerated. So hopefully when they get out, again, another thing that they have to get right back into, figure out how to do again, you know, this financial wellness piece. But tell us a little bit more about EJP, because they have a ton of different programs, which is absolutely amazing. They have group work, they have classes, they have a lot of different things.
Yeah, so I'll start with the program that I coordinate right now. And really the impetus for creating that program was the same idea that, guys have experienced this, want to fix it somehow. And one of the ways of looking at that is using the university's resources and wealth of knowledge to try to combine that with the lived experiences of people who've been incarcerated and create something that's helpful. Definitely not something that's as helpful as first followers, having an actual individual there to talk with. But it's able to lay out some of that stuff. And so that's one of the things is we do a yearly reentry guide and do research on areas. It's fairly comprehensive. It has a directory, but it also has pros talking about the various issues one might face, how to interview with a felony conviction. It's definitely not at all able to address all the problems as a result of being branded a felon, but it's the idea is to put some helpful information out there. Education Justice Project itself primarily was started to teach college classes in the Danville prison, upper level college classes, in partnership with the Danville Community College, but also to create a more of an environment of humanization in the prison, through the various people volunteering to teach classes in the prison, been able to offer classes like theater, mathematics, a number of things. But the idea is related to illustrate that college in prison is a very good thing and can be very helpful for a number of reasons, not just this, the idea that statistics like 50% recidivism rate in Illinois should be addressed through programs like this, but also create an environment of humanity in these systems, if at all possible. So another thing we have been doing is the Community Antiviolence Project, which CAVE for short, but it's along the same lines as like Ceasefire and then the program Joby talked about, doing these groups while with guys in prison, and then working with this initiative that many people getting out of prison want to return home to their communities and try to improve it in a really personal way based on the experiences that they've had. Another project that we do in the Danville prison is mindfulness groups. My side of things are, I don't go into the Danville prison very often, although I do visit prisons across Illinois to talk about the reentry guide and distribute them, but I do more stuff on the outside. There's sort of a divide between community stuff and stuff in the prison. And one of the other really great community programs we have is this group called Ripple Effect, and they write cards for guys in prison and women in prison to keep an important emotional connection going between people. It isn't so much a pen pal system or a pen pal service, but for people inside, receiving a card can be really important. So we all Ripple Effect also hosts talks with people who experience this to help talk about this in a meaningful way instead of just being brushed under the rug like you talked at the beginning. But
so on the EJP website, just to kind of give an overview of everything that's offered, they even have Education Justice Radio, they have 4-credit courses, writing workshops, reading groups, math and science workshops, there's a computer lab, they have language partners, resource room, they have speaker series, the Prison Justice Project, like you mentioned, mindfulness, research and writing center, and then a program for family and community engagement that focuses on those who are part of, who are family members of those who are incarcerated. So there's definitely a lot of great stuff that is coming out of EJP to really help, those who are incarcerated have a little bit more of a meaningful not only impact while they are incarcerated, but then hopefully give them some type of springboard to propel them once they're out so that they're walking out with an education that can help them, further themselves once they're back in society. So, one of the things that we talk about is, people who reoffend, and just kind of want to get your opinions on, why do you think we see that 50% level of people who are reoffending?
Because there's no opportunity. You can do all the class or the college courses you want inside of a prison. But when this guy come home, he go to Home Depot, have you been convicted? And, you know, so if you've been convicted and you still highly skilled, you got you have what's called buildings maintenance. Guys go up there to learn the basic construction. You got the auto body industry, you know. But if you don't remove, have you been convicted, then the guy, it's all for naught. Everything that he done in prison to try to better himself, when he gets here, the doors are slammed. And one of the things that impressed me about this young man, Marlon, is that they understanding the expungement and sealing of a record, because that helps. That helps that guy to really go into this and get what he need. It's when you're sending somebody to prison, he's actually building Illinois, because he's working, labor, no pay, no real pay, you know. So I guess what I'm saying is, it's in order to stop somebody from reoffending, they have to have substance, something sustainable that they can hold on to. A guy's not going to throw bricks at a penitentiary if he's got a job, if he's able to maintain his girl, his wife, and his kids, if he got an apartment or a house where he can pay his bills. He's not going to take the risk of doing anything illegal, robbery, selling drugs. You know what I'm saying? So, and the general public need to understand that the average guy that's coming home don't want to go back. And a lot of guys in prison for things that they didn't do, but they now they got this X on their back, so it's like the double-edged sword. So to the general public, if we got to create legislative acts, go create the legislature to change these particular speed bumps, if you will, for the ex-offender. You know, but equally important, this young man is also trying to stop him from offending, like this young man here is. So I hope that answers your question.
So I just want to piggyback on that a little bit. So just understanding what we're dealing with from issues of, we talk about systems, right? You know, systems are driven by three things: people, policy, and practices, right? And not all of those, and when those two or three things align themselves in this context of somebody reoffending, it's close to impossible for them to come home, to work, to get a place, to add something to their community. And I give an example of what I mean by that. Here in Champaign County, there is a policy on the books at the housing authority that states, if I've been incarcerated, I cannot parole to government housing. And that's initially where I came from, right? That's where my mom might be, that might be where my family is, my sister, brothers, my wife, my girlfriend. I can't parole to those establishments. That's a policy, right? And they're standing by that.
Mm-hmm.
And that policy reads that you have to be 5 years removed from your papers, meaning parole. So that means if I got out today, 2018, January 22nd, 2018, I have to be on parole, depending on what the offense is. The maximum amount of parole that I can do is 3 years. So now you're talking 2021. All right, I'm off parole. Then you add another 5 years to that.
Mm.
Now you're talking 2026. Before I can actually go into or actually go back into these neighborhoods or back into these apartment complexes. That's ridiculous. So those are the things that, those little things that us as a community or us as a public don't understand. You know, we go by our merry ways. And I like to say a lot of times what we do, everything that the criminal justice system is about is counterproductive. I mean, you're asking me to do my time, if I'm convicted, do my time, I finish my time, you're asking me to stay out of trouble. So how do I stay out of trouble if I can't work? How do I stay out of trouble if I can't find a place to live? Now we're talking about homelessness, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the basic necessities that every human needs, shelter, food, shelter, and, you know, just taking care, and health, yeah, and clothes. So these are all things that, going back to what I was saying about a systemic structure, is that when you have policies in place like that, and then you have authorities pushing these policies, but we're asking somebody to do something that's close to impossible, then we have to go back to the underground of selling drugs or sleeping on my grandma's couch, and whenever my parole agent comes around, I have to leave the neighborhood. These are real life situations because I see them every day. But a lot of times, you know, as a public, we're just in this fog walking around, scratching our heads, like, why does this guy keep going back to jail? Mm-hmm. You know, I got a brother that's a 6-time recidivist. You know, so these are things that I've seen from firsthand experiences.
But the jails are the ones that's benefiting. They are the ones that's benefiting because you got industries inside of the jails that the prisoners to work. You got companies or corporations that's in the prison system. And you have in the jail, you have in the convicts, the prisoners do the work dirt cheap for a corporation. And that corporation don't add nothing or put nothing into this prisoner's coffers or into his lifestyle when he's coming home from prison. Although he's, you know, in prison, ain't no such thing as sick pay. Ain't no such thing as days off. You know, so these corporations got the full blunt of a prisoner's working.
It's cheap labor.
You know what I'm saying? It's slave labor. It's not cheap labor, it's slave labor. And once they understand, once the general public understand that, and once the prisoners understand that as well, because a lot of prisoners don't realize that it's slave labor. But once they realize that and ask these corporations, say, look, I've been working for you for these many years. When I come home, give me a kickstart.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
But also, let me touch on the education in prison. You have now, well, you know, when I came through the prison, you was able to get, I got my GED because I was getting ready to graduate high school before I got incarcerated. So I ended up getting my GED eventually while I was incarcerated. But now they have it that a lot of institutions don't even allow you to obtain your GED. So individuals that's coming in that's high school dropouts and want to obtain their GED and they have a lot of time ahead of them, they can't even get their GED because you got to have your GED just to qualify to even get into college courses. So if you don't have a GED or no high school diploma, you can't even enroll into college. So a lot of guys spend their time on the wing playing cards, dominoes. They're not doing nothing that's rehabilitating themselves, that's educating themselves. So they come back out and they do the same things because they don't, you know, they try to get a quick, because they feel that they're not educated enough or have enough knowledge to come out and be able to work a job. They haven't been taught, you know, how to do resumes. That's the beauty that I love what Marlon them is doing. Their reentry program, actually, because I went through their program when I came home, did a resume. They helped me do mock interviews, fill out job applications. And, you know, I credit them a lot for my helping me with my reentry back into society. So, you know, a lot of individuals don't have that opportunity while they're in prison to try to educate themselves. I rehabilitated myself while I was in prison, but I educated myself also. You know, I got 2 associate's degrees and, you know, went through EJP and got bachelor degree credit courses, you know, and multiple certifications. So, you know, the field was open where you can get as many certifications as you could. When I was incarcerated, now I think they level it to only 2. You can only get 2 certifications and then that's it. So, you know, they make it hard for an individual to educate themselves while they're incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to add to Marlon's point, the Champaign Housing Authority temporary prohibition, I consider it a ban, but it also applies to the voucher program. So not only do you have people in housing projects themselves, you can't visit their family members or live there. You also have people who, it applies to people who are receiving a voucher for their apartment, so you can't visit or live there. And that's a big ban. I mean, just, you know, adds another X to someone's back. Where are you going to live?
Yeah, I think there's this, you know, there's always been this concept. I mean, it's always been part of politics, and when we're talking about funding for different things, this concept of pull yourself up by your bootstraps, that is really completely on an individual to, you know, rehabilitate themselves or whatever it is that society feels they need to do for themselves, by themselves. But I think we need to go back to this concept of it takes a village to raise a child. Well, why is that? Why does it take a whole village to raise a child? And when does that really ever stop? I know that, you know, we look at mothers, you know, especially single mothers, that there's a lot of programming available for them. Well, why is that? Because it takes a lot to have these different changes that, you know, come about in our lives. And this idea that you make a decision, you get incarcerated, you're punished, you should have known better, you should have, you know, had the hindsight or the foresight to know that this is going to lead you down this path. And now that you're here, you need to take, you know, the hard knocks and adapt. But at the same time, I think what I push back the most on is if you want to have a healthy community, you have to have healthy community members. And that means that as a community, you need to be able to provide them with what they need to re-enter society, to be a productive member of society, because not only does that benefit them, but that benefits everybody. You know, if you have somebody who comes out and they still are very much a part of their family and their friends' lives, but if you have somebody who comes out and is able to do something better, you know, when you're talking about being able to set that example or being able to provide that, and you know, that advice to somebody saying, don't go down the same path I did, you want to be able to make them a success story so that there really is that appreciation for, I did it, I know it was wrong, but I'm turning my life around. How are we teaching the next generation not to do that if we're stopping these people from re-entering successfully and being able to be successful contributors to our community? It's always been my argument that you really aren't able to have a healthy community unless you have all of your community members living healthy lives. And that includes what you both are talking about, you know, well, what everybody's talking about, basic needs are being met. Why are we making it so hard for basic needs to be met of people who are coming out? They, you know, I think that it's good to be able to remind people that nobody wants to go back. Like what you were saying, Marlon, that nobody comes out saying, I want to do the exact same crime again and I want to be convicted and I want to go back. That is not the mindset of anybody. Everybody wants to be able to come back out and be a part of society and contribute. You were right. Going to say something?
Yeah. I want the general public, your audience to also know, just because a guy's in prison, it's not necessarily that he did anything wrong. You know what I mean? When you look at the actual Innocence Project, when you look at Lovey and Lovey Law Firm, when you look at Michael Oppenheimer and John Erickson, these guys, I just helped a guy come home 6 months ago, Arthur Brown, locked up for something for 29 years for something that he didn't do. But more importantly, I would like for your audience, your listeners to understand is that in order to help us to be successful, in order to help us help anybody else, we have to understand the voting. We have to start, you know, drafting legislative acts to change certain things. You know, and they've been in play much too long. If you look at what happened in Philadelphia, look at the prosecutor there, I think it was the 17th of this month, he fired 30 prosecutors. You know, when you go to Virginia, you look at the governor there, he and you gotta Google him, he eloquently spoke about second chance. How do you give a guy a second chance? And mm-hmm. You know, so in order for our kids not to be able to pick up a gun, in order for our kids not to sell drugs, we need a double E, education and employment. That's so important. I don't care what you're doing, if you're not telling them how to get money, because that's the purpose, they ain't trying to hear what you got to say. So with that said, we looking at hoping to get the community behind a hire. Look at this, the economic boom that's going around in this town, on campus, off of campus. When you walk past that work site, you don't see any blacks. You just see white men. or white women. You know, these kids need to be able to get a piece of that pie. That in and of itself will stop a guy from throwing bricks at the penitentiary. When you go look at the YMCA, they built the YMCA in Champaign. It's in a lily white neighborhood. When I go to the Y, I don't see any blacks there. You know what I'm saying? So they don't have the opportunities to really, as you say, pull themselves up by their bootstraps. So we here are targeting solutions.
So, you know, we're looking at or talking, and I want to go into it a little bit more in a minute, but we're looking at the obstacles that they face now with reentry. But it is good to have that understanding of what you think those obstacles were before they even went in. You know, what caused them to commit this crime in the first place,
I think. A lot of people don't commit the crime. This is what I'm trying to get into your head, into your listeners' head. Just because they went to prison is not necessarily that they committed the crime.
But that is an obstacle then, the fact that they're being convicted of something. I mean, we're talking, I think the thing to be able to be proactive, you know, when you want to be able to, like you're talking about, Joby, be able to get in front of it and try to figure out how to keep this from happening. That may be one of the things that you have to have a better discussion about is who's being incarcerated for crimes that they don't commit. I mean, that has to be one of the pieces. Education, it sounds like, is another piece. You know, is education being prioritized in the way that it's supposed to be prioritized? And is there, you know, equity and equality when it comes to educational resources within schools, within neighborhoods? You know, these are the kind of conversations that you also want to be able to have. So when people want to be able to get in front of the issue, they have an understanding, a better understanding, again, kind of going back to what I was saying before, of who the demographics are and what it is that they didn't get in the first place, whether it was, you know, like what you're saying, that they're being incarcerated for something they didn't do or they're not receiving the right education. What else do you see as being those things that they should have had in the beginning that could end up giving them that fork in the road, unfortunately?
A family unit. You know, the mothers are without the fathers.
You got to get a little closer.
The family unit. The mothers are without the fathers. And the father's not there because he's in prison. And he's in prison for either trying to get money the wrong way or they gave him a case. So in order for that to be successful, that male figure need to be there. That male figure need to be there. And when he's not there, the mother need as much support as she possibly can to help her man child to navigate through a maze of madness. And in order to do these things, we have to change laws. We have to create different laws. And that's...
I just want to talk a little about the education system. In particular, here in Champaign, Urbana. I mean, the graduation rate for African-American males is ridiculous. When I say ridiculous, I'm talking maybe 50 to 60% are only graduating. All right, so that's a total breakdown. And I commend Joby, because I visited the gun violence in the community forum that you had the other night. And one of the things he talked about was he has a story to tell, Joby. He has a lived experience, right? He knows he's been there. And he's barred because of a policy of going into the Unifor School District. His mission is to use his voice to reach those that look like him, that are heading down the exact same road that he's heading down, but he cannot do that because there's a policy in place, and there's a policy that's being enforced that says, we don't want your kind sharing any of the information, any of the knowledge, any of the experiences that you have within our walls. Now, it's clear to me, 50 to 60% graduation rate, that's ridiculous. So you're talking about an education system that is systemically flawed, and it will continue to be systemically flawed until you change those policies.
Mm.
You know, and I'm not saying just open the floodgates where anybody can come and teach and come into the, and that's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is there needs to be an individualized approach, because if we're gonna sit on these panels every other week talking about gun violence in the community, until you come up with radical solutions, honest conversations, uncomfortable conversations. Because at the end of the day, it is about race. I mean, we've heard this term mass incarceration for the last 30 to 40 years. To me personally, it's not mass incarceration. It's a targeted incarceration that was done purposeful. Now you're talking about, going to Jerome's point, you're talking about generation after generation after generation. Incarceration is generational. And that targeted incarceration has caused that. Meaning, if I can say, I mean, most of the young men that I deal with, I have another spinoff from First Fathers. I deal with the 18 to 24 year olds that what when I was growing up, I went through that. And what they call it, the endangered species. The young black male has always been the endangered species. And that's because they haven't had that father figure in place or that male figure in place, because he, for somehow, some reason, was removed from the home. And we can go back, and I can really go way back into a historical context, but I know we don't have time for that. But there's a historical context that has always been that, and it has always been embedded in the American society. And that's just honest. You know, and I tell people all the time, especially the young men, what you're facing and what you're going through is no different than what was happening in the 50s, 60s, the creation of slavery, all of that. You know, stamped from the beginning at a disadvantage. Now, trying to understand a system and go through that maze when you have blinders on, it's close to impossible. It's close to impossible for those young black men, but it's also very difficult for the older black men, because there's guys of my age, we're still trying to get it together. You know, we're trying to figure this all out. We all are trying to figure this all out. But at the same time, like I said, only way that there's going to be a radical change is if we have to start having these difficult conversations. You know, I took time out to go to that panel, and I left feeling
a waste of time.
Where were the solutions? Nobody talked about a solution, but Joby touched on it about going into the school system. He touched on it, and Dr. Anderson Brown, or Cobb, I'm sorry, she talked about it. She talked about an identity. What's your social identity? You know, far too often this gun violence is because of machoism and not being led in the right direction. A lot of times we're working off these precepts because society is looking at us as you don't belong anyway. And so those are conversations that needs to be had. And I don't, for some reason, nobody wants to have those difficult conversations.
I think there's a level of probably denial, like you're saying, about where the actual work needs to be done, which is, you know, why I was really happy with what Dr. Cobb added, was there are these components that are maybe touched upon slightly in conversations, but they aren't the primary focus, which is what that's where the shift needs to happen. And I think that's really where, like, my piece when I'm talking about the call to action from the town hall is that it has to be getting involved. It has to be finding things like truce or first followers as a way to get involved, versus this idea that these groups are able to sustain their own efforts. They're able to create their own efforts. They're able to find their own resources. They're able to sustain their own, you know, resources. I think the focus is there is such a deficiency on the part of the community to be involved in saying, okay, we see an increase in gun violence. Now the panelists are the ones who are supposed to be the ones who are to fix this. For me, it's always been the community is just as obligated to be a part of that solution. I think there's hopefully going to be multiple ways of being part of a solution, but you're right. It comes down to, if you're not having a legitimate conversation in the first place, you won't have legitimate solutions that follow, because you'll have the same usual suspects of, well, education needs to be important. Okay, but how does it need to be important? What are we missing here when we have that type of graduation rate for African American males? Again, those are the discussions that really need to be the center and the focus, not just, we know education needs to be improved. Well, the education system will always need to be improved for everybody. But what are we doing to improve it for the ones who, those are the graduation rates we're seeing? And then now you have this domino effect from there. When they're not graduating, what else is happening? If they're not able to earn their GED, if they're choosing a different lifestyle, those are the conversations that I'm hoping will come out of that. My hope is that we're going to have an actual town hall specifically around what Dr. Cobb was talking about, because I think, again, that is another component that I think some people don't understand the significance of what she was saying, you know, how impactful that is. But
when you're looking at education, not to cut you off, when you're looking at the school system and its education, you have to look at how it's being funded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the tax dollars are the main of these schools. And if you're in a community that the taxes are not covering its school, then that school won't receive the teachers, the computer labs, whatever it is one need to be successful. I went to Creek High School, and it was like a college campus. I went into Gage Park High School, and it was like me visiting a prison. I had to walk through metal detectors, and the students wasn't getting anything because there was nothing to be given to them. So you have to fund these schools in order for kids to get an education. I had to ask myself, how did I fail in the school system?
Well, and another thing that I know has been in debate, the U of I actually made, you know, I think the News Gazette's even run articles about this concept of, you know, are you seeing a reflection in your educators of the population that's there? Meaning, do you see, you know, Black teachers in the school districts? Are we giving our students that benefit of having that? So I think, again, those are part of those real conversations that you have to have when you're talking about how do we make this better. It cannot just be very ambiguous. Well, of course we want to make education better. That, I think, is where we keep going wrong, is that that's the conversation that we have, is that we all know we want education to be a priority, but there are certain ways that it needs to change to make sure that different, you know, demographics within these systems are getting what they need. You know, one of the questions I want to make sure we get to before we run out of time is how, again, you know, that call to action from the town hall, how people get involved. So I want to kind of go start with over here with Joby and then go across and find out what are the priority needs of your organization right now, and how can the community get behind your organization and support them? And, you know, again, when we're talking about, you know, addressing gun violence or addressing anything else, I think it means being a part of organizations that are already existing and doing work. So, you know, just let us know what it is that your organization really needs right now and how the community can get involved with that.
I have a lot of things planned for this year, 2018, that I want to do with the kids. And it's mainly, we got a love on the kids. The kids feel like we don't care about them. You know, I was talking to a teacher out at Booker T. Washington, and I was telling her, like, you know, you have to be careful. You know how it's all about language. You know, when you tell a child, get over there, sit down, pull your pants up. You know, the child not gonna receive that. But if you listen to kids, want to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
You listen to them. Listen to the issues that they have, the problems that they have, and then you give them a rationale solution. Like, okay, you know, what if you would have looked, you would have did it this way here. Now you got them thinking. So what we're going to do is we're going to take the kids up out of this element of being confined to just here in Champaign, Urbana, and we're going to take them out and let them have fun. So I have, you know, I have aspirations to take them to Great America, to water parks, you know, to basketball games, football games, just to take them up out of the neighborhoods, let them see that it's other things out in the world that they can enjoy and they can do. But my biggest event I have coming up, I have the rapper from Chicago, G Herbo, that's going to come down and he's going to perform for me. He's going to talk to the kids first and he's going to perform for the kids. And, you know, he's been doing a lot of motivational speaking, going back to the high schools up in Chicago and to the grammar schools, talking to the kids. So I asked him to come down, and he's going to come down. I'm going to set it up sometime in April, so, you know, be on the lookout for that. But I have a lot of things that I'm going to do that's going to really get the kids and involve the kids and, you know, get them up out of this element of being in Champaign-Urbana.
So are there things that the public can do to help with funding for that? Or
yes, I talked with Tracy. Me and him going to have a meeting. We're going to see if we can get some funds. You know, we're funded right now through the mental health board because, you know, violence is a mental health issue. So we're funded through the mental health board. But we're going to see if we can get some other type of city funding from somewhere. And, you know, we're taking private donations also.
Okay. And then I want to make sure, because we have a ton of stuff that the EJP is involved with, that like there's even volunteer opportunities for like teaching and things like that. But where would you say your greatest need is right now with EJP?
I mean, I'm a little biased since I run the reentry guide effort, but each of the reentry guides cost about $10 to print and ship to guys and women as well who request. Request them. They are free, but donations to help sustain that process is I think would be great. We're also this coming year hosting events, talking, you know, featuring the voices of people who've experienced this, around campus. Simply donating your time to one of those things and learning about this issue is, I would say, is very important as well. You know, donate your time, donate money to this issue, but really highlight the voices of people who experienced it. The next one coming up is with Monica Cosby on Thursday, February 5th, and that'll be in the Murphy Gallery in the University YMCA. We all are also taking volunteers, of course, for our in-person programs and also to help work on the reentry guide. And all of our volunteer efforts are featured online at educationjustice.net. But I'd say above all, you know, just listen to people who've been through this. That's helpful for, I think, all of our causes.
Okay, Marlon, let us know, like, what can we do to get involved with First Followers? Where's your biggest need? Is there funding? I mean, what can the community do to help with this?
Well, I think one of the biggest needs is for corporate America to step up. It's been far too long that, you know, they funded incarceration. Now they need to fund decarceration, right? And they need to put money back into those communities. Going back to something that Jerome said, so Champaign County, or Champaign, I know, Champaign-Urbana area is the second fastest growing community in the state of Illinois. And as you see these apartment complexes, these high rises, constant building on campus, so Champaign isn't hurting for anything. Certain communities are. Well, as a whole, they're not. Mm-hmm. So just holding their feet to the fire and some level of accountability about economic development for these communities that have been ravaged through incarceration. I think that's one of the things. So we're looking to have more input or involvement from corporate sponsors to help us do what we want to do. I have just started a 14-week, what we call a workforce development program. We're in our 11th week. And it's a project that we call GOMAD. I have 10 scholars, all between the 18 and 24-year-old. They're learning these building construction trades.
Awesome.
But one of the first things that we did was we put them in a classroom setting to give them an education. Because many of them don't have a high school diploma or a GED. So we've tailored the actual curriculum to fit their needs.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that, you know, they're young men, 19, 20, 21-year-olds. You know, the education system failed them, point blank. So there's a difference between education and useful education.
Right.
So we're able to develop a curriculum that's useful for them, to give them the skill set, and just to give them confidence to know that, you know, you do have self-worth. You know, you have to value yourself. But all of this was created because of this whole thing about gun violence in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And this 18 to 24-year-old group usually are the ones that's being perpetrated as either being the victim or the one that's doing the shooting, right?
Right.
But we wanted to bring a counter-narrative to that. So the 10 guys that I have, they get it. I mean, we had those honest conversations about what it is to be a man. You know, and then sometimes you have to deconstruct and peel all of that back to help them say, well, I got that wrong. But you have to give them an education, because if you just leave them out there in their day-to-day struggles, their day-to-day lives, and the day-to-day challenges that they have, they're going to continue down the same road because they don't have an opportunity. They don't see anything different. So you have to provide a counter-narrative. And that kind of goes back to that radical shift. It's not going to work in traditional education a lot of times. We see that's failing, or the dropout rate wouldn't be so high.
Right.
So just to answer your question, I mean, the community has stepped up and support First Followers. We really appreciate that. But to have more corporate sponsors, because with this workforce development piece, we have been gifted from someone in the community a home, a single family home, where we've gone in last week and stripped and gutted the whole home down to just the studs. And we're going to redevelop that. But it gives them that hands-on practical experiences of the building trades.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're looking at Champaign, the university is always going to be here.
Right.
Building is always going to be here. Construction is always going to be here.
But now it's time for corporate sponsors to really
step up,
which is good. I mean, and again, I think that may be a component where people don't necessarily put those two things together. So, yeah, I mean, definitely now you've heard exactly how you can be involved with these different groups. So there's no question about how you can support the three organizations who are here. Before we roll out of the show, I just wanted to let everybody know about the Armor of Light. It's a film by Abigail Disney and Kathleen Hughes. It's January 26th, 7 o'clock, University YMCA. It's a film screening from Lucy McBath. She's a national spokesperson. Her child was gunned down by gun violence just for playing his music too loud at a gas station. So that would definitely be, again, you know, when we're talking about education, this is also an educational component for the community. Get educated about what these groups do. Get educated about what gun violence is really about, who those demographics are, who are really affected. And then maybe you can start seeing, you know, what leads up to these different situations and how these demographics are not getting a fair shake when it comes to education and other pieces. Thank you guys for being in the studio today. This is the first of this conversation, not the last. We will be continuing this conversation, you know, in future town halls, focusing on very specific topics as we try to figure out how to, you know, again, like I said, have a healthier community. Thanks again, guys. I appreciate you guys being here tonight. Tune in next week. We will be talking about immigration.
Slashed and torn. I didn't cut off that song. It just ended there all of a sudden. Hey, you're listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Streaming online, weft.org. And that was this week's episode of, well, not episode, but that was this week's In the Know. Thank you so much, Sherry, for that. And coming up here in just a couple of moments here will be Radio Theater. Juliet is out this week, so you got Jess Vine here in the house spinning the stories for you. We'll have a little announcement here about one of our sponsors. How about the Art Theater?